Good morning and welcome to your Friday edition of the Holy Commutes podcast. My name is Tom Gannon, but some people call me Dr. Winkley, and I am joined by MLW's Tommy Coughlin. Tommy, how you doing?
Pretty good, Tom. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, this should be a fun one. I believe this is the last episode of Holy Commutes for the season. The next season, I believe, will be in April and will be a four-week season instead of the short three-week season we're on right now. But anyway, let's get into it. This weekend, I was at the MLW Valley Whiffs tournament in Phoenix, Arizona, or I guess technically Mesa, Arizona. I was not there for the Friday festivities, but boy, were those fields cool. It was a nice big field, almost 90 degrees even, had a big batter's eye. So Tommy, how difficult were those fields to set up? Because it did not look easy.
Well, that was kind of a first for us too. You know, for the majority of our MLW tournaments, or I want to say even all of them, we've been on, you know, some sort of sports complex, whether it's a multi-sport complex or a baseball complex. And, you know, we always just use the existing home run fence, where in this case, the people at Mesa, that event was actually, you know, put on in partnership with the city of Mesa and, you know, the parks there. So this was at Riverview Park in Mesa. So they actually had a staff of people that set up those fields as is. And, you know, you never really know what you're going to get when you're, you know, flying across the country and you're hoping that, you know, fields look good, everything turns out great, but the staff there did a great job. And yeah, you know, the batter's eye, that was a first for us too, but when the staff was setting up, when the park staff was doing it, they said, you know, we have extra panels here, it's like a batter's eye. And I was like, heck yeah, let's do a batter's eye. Why not? So they did a great job.
So you guys didn't really have to do much of the actual field setup, because when I got there, I was like, wow, these guys must have, those parks department people must have had their work cut out for them.
Yeah, I'm sure it took the majority of Friday to get those set up. And yeah, like I said, a lot of these tournaments, you know, we had a couple this year that were our first time at these locations. And some locations, you know, it is our responsibility to, you know, get some lines down for fair and foul and the singles and the doubles line. And other facilities and parks are a lot more involved in helping us set up or doing all of the setup for us. So it really is kind of a feel thing with how the facility and organization is being run and the cooperation there.
So let's move on to Saturday. Saturday we had the pool play, standard two games of pool play. My team, we played against Way Too Beautiful and the other MLW team that Kyle was on, not your team.
Mm-hmm.
And you had pool play games. I forgot one of the teams you played, but you had a pretty wild game against Whiffzilla, if I saw correctly on the tournament app. And, you know, I saw a little bit of the game, but I didn't see the ending.
Yeah, we ended up in what started off as a lopsided game against Whiffzilla, kind of turned into a barn burner as, you know, I actually started that game on the mound, struggled a bit with control, per usual, and then our other MLW pitcher, Brendan Jorgensen, came in and settled down a bit, but when it was all said and done, we were down by like a dozen runs. But then I forget who Whiffzilla threw to start the game. But then Tui actually came in, I think, you know, just to try to close the game out and to get his reps in. And on Saturday, he was struggling to, you know, lock it in and find the zone. So we were able to crawl back with some walks. We had a grand slam and we ended up losing the game by a score of 13-12. So it was wild.
So who hit the grand slam?
Brendan Schultz did. That wasn't off of Tui, actually, I don't think. Tui might have came in after the Grand Slam. But regardless, it got wild. And we made a bit of a comeback, but came just short. And then on Sunday, Tui dialed it up.
Yeah, I got to face him as well. I clocked him at 95 on the pocket radar during the championship game.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so that guy throws really fast. Should we talk about that for a minute?
I mean, you said it. He throws very, very fast. And we faced him on Saturday, like I said, in pool play just for one inning there at the end. And, you know, he was still throwing firm, but not like he was on Sunday. So I managed to get a hit off him, but he was probably only throwing, you know, low to mid-80s that day. Whereas when it came time to championship game, he's dialed it up. He just throws hard. And not only that, but, you know, you can tell he knows how to play the game. He knows how to pitch. He knows the art of pitching. And you can just tell he has you know, the baseball background, just such a nice swing and great mechanics on the mound as well.
Yeah, great player. I was just happy to have fouled one off. I think he struck us out in every at-bat when we played them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was dealing, and super nice guy too, so.
Yeah, one of the nicest. Mm-hmm. And another credit to Kyle. Kyle actually ripped a single up the middle off an 89-mile-an-hour slider. So that's always a fun moment, even though they obviously lost the game.
Yeah, Kyle saw the ball very well. It's impressive. Kyle's a great hitter. I mean, I can't say it any other way. I think his stats in MLW have proved themselves, and I think people may look at that and say, "Well, how does that translate into more of the fast pitch competitive scene?" But he's done well everywhere we've gone. He's done well. He's got a really simple swing, good approach, and he just flat out can hit.
Yeah, he's a wiffle ball player, for sure. All right, let's see. I don't know, it's hard to bring this up without making it seem like I'm just tooting my own horn, but let's talk about the home run derby. That was fun. There were a lot of kids hitting home runs. We had the field with the wind blowing straight out. I know you had the camera most of the time, so why don't you talk about the beginning? I actually wasn't there at the beginning.
Well, yeah, we always try to do a home run derby at our tournaments, where any participants from both the tournament or even just locals that have arrived to the event and are spectating can participate in a derby and see what they're made of on the wiffle ball field. So no different this weekend, except for we were actually able to partner up with Joe Adell and his foundation and do a bit of a charity event to raise some money with the Derby. So that was a lot of fun, and the winners were to receive signed cleats from Joe Adell. And if you aren't familiar with Joe Adell, he's a very high prospect in the MLB right now. Last year was his rookie season with the Los Angeles Angels. So
And he was also messing around the field. It looked like he was having a fun time with it.
yeah, he was really great with the kids. He cooperated super well with us. It was great to get to know him, and yeah, I think he was super happy with the event. I know we were. So regardless, yeah, Derby went well. A lot of great hitters, from kids who were 8 years old to grown-ups like you and I. And you hit late in the Derby, but when you just put on an absolute show, I mean, I lost track. I'm not sure how many. You might have hit north of 30, because this was not a home run. This was not a timed Derby. This was classic MLB style 10 outs, and I seriously lost count. I'm thinking you were in the 30s or 40s.
No, it couldn't have been that many, but I think Sean, my teammate, he was videoing it, and I think he counted about 20.
20, okay.
It was funny rewatching it on the Instagram feed, you guys being like, I don't know how many he has.
I mean, it was just pitch after pitch after pitch. They were just flying out of the park. So it was impressive, I'll be honest too. I was impressed.
I'm gonna be on YouTube, aren't I, for the tournament video.
Yeah, eventually, definitely. I mean, you definitely stole the show at that Derby. So there was a
Yeah, a lot of the guys gave me some crap for it was like I was showing up the kids going after them.
Well,
But
I mean,
the kids also after me was the swing off, and that was the most electric part of the
that
day.
was correct. And it was funny because you were near the end. So someone who hit near the beginning in our age division in the Derby was holding on to the lead the entire time with like 8 or 9 homers. And then you go out there and hit 20. So I don't think there was any doubt, though, that you were the best hitter, home run derby style.
That makes me feel good. And yeah, I've hit a lot of BP since moving to Las Vegas, and I've had a few good rounds out here when the wind's blowing out, so I knew kind of what to expect. And then after the home run derby, let's talk about the little special guest that kind of flew under the radar, it felt like.
You referring to Trevor Bauer?
Yeah, well, I guess first we should talk about Eric Sim. He was kind of only there for the derby.
Yeah, I would rather just get into the Eric Sim thing than the Bauer thing, if that's cool with you.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So yeah, Eric Sim, someone who I, to be honest with you, so Eric Sim did make an appearance at the Home Run Derby and then stuck around a little bit afterwards to shoot some content with us. And he is someone who I'm not super familiar with, to be honest. I've seen his name and his clips over the years, but never really have dove into his content and checked him out. But
I actually found out about him through a wiffle ball video. Those guys in, I think, in Washington, the
oh, okay.
AWA.
Yeah, there you go. So exactly. So I wasn't too familiar with him, but I know one of our players, Ryan Kratz, who's a Division III baseball player. I know him and his teammates. It sounds like are really into his videos and his content. And he's essentially, yeah, a content creator who does a lot of different things, but everything's kind of centered around baseball. So we were able to get in touch with him as he's native to the Phoenix area or the Mesa area. And yeah, he came out and shot a little vlog. A lot of the kids were excited to see him. And then him and Ryan and some of the other MLW guys made some TikToks together, made some Instagram videos, that kind of thing. So it's fun. It was cool for us to go out west and collaborate with some people who we've had on our radar for a little bit. But yeah, it's cool because in Michigan where we're at, there's not that kind of talent just right in our backyard. You know what I mean? Not those kind of personalities. So.
Yeah, and I think the funniest thing for me the whole weekend was how a lot of the younger kids were talking smack with Eric Sim, like sort of using his catchphrases, it seemed like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is funny because I think you get to really see kids' true personalities when someone like that comes out, or even us. You know, some kids are very, very shy and they shy away, and other kids are super excited, you know, meet the people they've been watching on the internet over the years. So it's cool.
Yeah, it was sort of funny to see that interaction for me.
Yeah, I think Eric Sim, the king of JUCO, I think he already uploaded a clip from that home run derby on his Instagram feed, and I think even a TikTok as well. So that was cool.
Yeah, I saw something on Twitter that he posted from the tournament that was sort of like a little mashup.
Yeah, he seemed super nice. I really didn't get to chat with him too much. He only stayed for about an hour and a half or so, and I pretty much just briefly introduced myself, and that was it. I was more focused on getting our content, making sure the derby was run smoothly and stuff like that, but super cool for people to, you know, come to our event and see what we're all about.
So first for the Phoenix tournament and then sort of for all of the tournaments you guys have run, what was the biggest challenge this time around? And then, you know, sort of some recurring things maybe that you've seen.
I think there's a lot of challenges that go along with trying to run tournaments, you know, both like logistically and then just dealing with things as they happen. You know, we don't really have like a rubric when it comes to that kind of thing. And this goes all the way back to our first tournament we ever hosted in 2017, which was out of a complex in Ohio all the way till now in the, you know, winter of 2022. Challenges with this one, I'd say, and this is new for us, you know, we always learn, we seem to always, you know, we learn things at each tournament, try to improve on them for the next one. And in this scenario, you know, we had, in times past, when it's an out-of-state tournament, we try to, like, we've had the idea of, like, ordering the tournament, you know, t-shirts or merchandise locally to us in Michigan, and then having to deal with shipping things out, which is never super easy to do and it gets expensive. So we're like, why not order some merchandise directly to the site? So we did that in Texas. Texas Tim actually helped us out with that. We sent it to him and then he met us at the facility. And Tim then Dean. We've done it. Yeah, Tim Dean. We've done it in Illinois. And then for this one, we did the same idea, but we sent it to the city of Mesa, to their local office, and the packages were rejected. So we didn't have tournament t-shirts. We had to contact UPS and get them sent back to us here, and we have them on the site. So stuff like that.
I didn't think of that. That stinks.
Yeah, so, you know, it's a bummer, of course. But once again, a learning experience. You know, now in the future, Kyle and I will be sure to, I guess, communicate more clearly with where the shirts are going, making sure that everyone's on track as to when things are arriving. And learn from it moving forward. I always try to, things like that happen, you know, when we're navigating things and learning, like I said, as we go. And this is all, even though we've been doing this for a couple of years now, and we've had about, you know, a dozen tournaments or so, like I said, things like that happen, and we didn't foresee it. So it's always try to, yes, it stinks and it's a bummer, but now we know, you know what I mean? So.
Yeah. So does that mean there might be some shirts on clearance on the MLW merch site?
Pretty much. I don't know. I actually don't post the t-shirts to MLW merch. Kyle does. But yes, we have the, if anyone wants a MLW Valley Whiffs t-shirt, they are available on MLWmerch.com because they were not available at the event.
I know a few people that do.
So there you go. There you go.
And I think an interesting note that I kind of didn't realize until we were driving back from the tournament is that, so I'm assuming that the Phoenix tournament is the furthest west you've been, and the Boston is the furthest east?
That is correct.
So me, Mike Tuohy, and Dan Haverty were at both of those.
I know. You guys are insane. I said this, I was just talking to Jordan Robles last week.
Part of it's that, you know, me and Tuohy both moved out here, and then I guess Haverty's brother also moved to Phoenix, or something like that.
Okay.
And that's why he was planning on visiting him anyway. But sorry, what were you going
to
say?
No, I mean, it just speaks to, you know, the passion and the dedication to wiffle ball players like yourself. You know, I was talking to Robles a few weeks ago on our podcast, and he was talking about all the traveling and sacrifice he's made to keep playing the game. So to see people traveling cross country to just, you know, play the game, see the people they're friends with and they've met over the years in the game, it's just super cool.
And I was actually just talking to Jordan today about joining the draft for the PLW here in Vegas. So we might see an appearance or two from him this season.
Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome. I really
that guy gets around.
Yeah, he does. It's just cool to see people, you know, put a lot into their passions and yeah, go to that extent to keep playing the game of whiffs.
Yeah, all right. I guess that's pretty much all we've got for the tournament. So let's move on to MLW in 2022. I mean, last year was your best and biggest year, and I'm sure you're pretty much saying that every year at this point. So are there any specific things that you're planning on adding to the league for this year?
Yeah, we're always trying to brainstorm ways to, go bigger, go better, but also create something that's, manageable and exciting and still the best content possible. So something new we introduced last year, some of you may have seen, was we actually filmed the series at a nice turf, professional looking wiffle ball field out in Oklahoma. So
That was pretty interesting. I remember that. I watched that one.
That was our first experience doing something like that, where we, pack up our bags and take an MLW series to a different location. So it went really well. We had a great time doing it, and I think our fans really enjoyed it, and it performed very well on the channel. So we're looking into doing some more things like that, as well as, just never. There's a lot of opportunities that come up, mid-season, and things that come up that we didn't even anticipate, or ideas that we haven't even had, where
Like
people
being
that
on
have.
TBS.
Exactly. So stuff like that. So we're always trying to, make relationships where we can, and collaborate if needed, and try to just make exciting stuff happen. So we have a couple things in the works, and as soon as those we've crossed the T's and dotted the I's, we'll be happy to announce what's on the schedule for 2022.
Love it. And would love to see you guys make a trip to Vegas. I know we're planning a big tournament for the beginning of November. And, we've got a pretty cool field if you're looking to do one of those traveling series out here.
Yeah, there you go. I've never been to Vegas. I gotta make my way out there sometime.
Yeah, it's we got a good wiffle ball thing going, and we're building a new field.
Cool.
So should be exciting. All right, I think that's pretty much everything I've got for you, but ooh, I got one. Okay, so we use the pocket radar to enforce a speed limit in our league here at PLW, and I noticed that this year you introduced the pocket radar at MLW, but I've seen a couple of the speed violations in the videos, but I'm not 100% sure exactly how the rule works. So why don't you break it down for me?
Yeah, I think wiffle ball is played in many different ways across the country, and like you said, your league I think has a 55 mile per hour speed limit that you enforce
That's
with a
right.
pocket radar gun. So
Yep.
we've for years just kind of always said, we're a medium fast pitch league, and always have just kind of eyeballed things, which I was never a huge fan of, as were a lot of the guys in the league.
Oh, I
But
remember after that interview you had after winning the World Series about how you play fundamental wiffle ball and you don't try to break the speed limit.
All that kind of stuff. So, but it's hard to say you have a speed limit when you don't actually have a speed limit, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, we got it done. We got a radar gun system, and how our rule works is we pitch from 38 feet away, and the speed limit we set is 72 miles per hour. That was just the
That's
number
pretty
we
quick.
that was the number we came to. Yeah, it's pretty quick. It's firm. It's not unhittable, but it's firm from that distance.
Yeah.
And so then how the rule works is it you're call it your speed warnings slash your speed, limit violations are they reset every inning. So 72 is the limit. If you throw 73 or 74, that's your one warning for the inning, okay?
Got
If you
it.
throw that speed again or faster, that's an automatic ball. However, if you have no warnings, if you haven't thrown 73 or 74, but your first, so-called violation of the inning or warning of the inning is 75 or above, that's an automatic ball. So that prevents someone from just gassing up on an 0-2 pitch with two outs, and then just that gets away with the warning, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
So that's why that rule is in place. So if you
that
screw
makes
up
sense.
once and go 73, 74, just a warning. If you do it again, that's an automatic ball. Anything over 75 plus is an automatic ball, no matter if you have a warning or not. So that's what
And
we
that's
started
even if you
with.
put it in play, unless you get a hit and you decide to, decline the penalty, so to speak.
So yeah, the ball is still live, and exactly, we haven't had that happen yet, where someone has gassed up and thrown over the limit, and a ball's been, hit over the fence. But yeah, it would be almost like football, where the penalty would just be declined, and the hitter would get the nod there. So,
Yeah, you got to do the little umpire in front of the camera and they
yeah,
decline the penalty, repeat first down, or I mean repeat
absolutely,
next batter.
repeat next batter. So yeah, that's what we decided to go with. We kind of had it. We implemented that after the All-Star break. And kind of had our first series of games as a trial run. We didn't actually enforce anything too hard. And then once every team had played with it once, where it was present and they could see their speeds, after that it was game on with the radar gun, and it went really well.
Yeah, and I also at the tournament I had Ryan Kratch at 90 miles per hour on the pocket radar. So, what are the plans for MLW to get him to one of these fast pitch tournaments?
Yeah, we've been working on it. You know, it's not always easy to rally the troops. He still plays college baseball, as I mentioned, and everyone has stuff going on in their personal lives. So we do the best we can to assemble the best of the best that we have in our league and go out to tournaments like UIFs and stuff like that. So we're hoping to get Ryan out there this year to York.
Yeah, I think that would really make your team stand out. Because one thing I feel like I've noticed is that even at the fast pitch tournaments, you guys aren't throwing that much over your own speed limit.
No, we're really not, just because that's what we're used to. And
Yeah. Sometimes movement's really more important anyway.
yeah, it can be. But we see, you know, we do dial it up a bit, but yeah, we're not throwing as hard as guys like Tui. So.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's really. The guys kept throwing that hard, you could probably count on one hand.
Yeah, exactly. So,
Or
yeah.
they still play baseball because they throw
Yeah.
95.
Yeah, he's a different breed. He's a different breed.
Yeah, and he's like he's not a big guy either. It's like
I
putting everything
know.
into that.
I know, it's awesome. It's impressive. I told him that. It's impressive.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people tell him that. Anyway, I think that's pretty much all the time we have. That's pretty much everything I wanted to cover. Anything you'd like to plug, talk about?
No, thanks for having me on, Tom. I guess if I had to plug one thing, if you guys are into Holy Commutes podcast and you want to listen to more Wiffle Ball content, MLW does have its own podcast. It's called Pipe It Up. Check it out if you haven't already. We usually do about, 20 to 30 minutes of Wiffle Ball talk and then maybe 15 to 30 minutes of talking about anything. So I run it. It's a good time, and check it out if you want.
I second
Or
that.
don't.
Have listened.
Yeah,
Definitely a good time.
we have fun. We have fun, so.
All
Thanks.
right. I'm Tom. He's Tom. Thank you for listening to Holy Commutes. And I believe this is the last show of the season, so we'll see you guys in April. See ya.
Tom signing out. See ya.